All right, everybody, welcome to our lucky seventh episode of Cave Sports Now, the show that brings you everything you need to know in local high school sports. My name is Steve Dedarian, alongside my co-sports writer here, Matt Goisman. And Matt, April vacation's over. Mm-hmm. We've hit late April, heading into May. And we have a lot of games to play in the next month, and it really happens so quickly when you think about it. These next 4 or 5 weeks basically are going to determine how the rest of the season goes, who's making playoffs, and who's getting ready for graduation and summertime.
Yeah, exactly. And thankfully, the weather is finally starting to pick up a little bit. It seems like maybe we're through the worst of it, and so actually these games will be played consistently, and everything will be a little bit more like what we expect the spring to be.
Yeah, I mean, once we hit May, I mean, you've known from past years, things just seem to start rolling. Teams get into a groove, and that's not to say there aren't some exciting matchups, but you get a better feel of how these teams play out and how some of these matchups are going to play out. So it should be a really exciting next couple weeks. And like I said, some of these teams only played as few as like 2 or 3 games.
Yeah, not so everybody plays during April vacation. Right. A lot of teams do, but some can't, or they choose to do other things with their time, or they let their kids go off. A lot of seniors use April vacation to scout the colleges they maybe got admitted to. So, you know, there are a lot of teams that are going to be starting up games this week after, you know, a week, even 10 days off. So that's why this is really the key moment, because a lot of the momentum of the first 3 weeks, it just naturally comes to a close in April vacation. And now it's sustained action all the way into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I used to run high school track. I mean, this was always around the time where the workouts really started to get intense because if your team's not off to a great start, all right, you got to fix it. You got to say, hey, we need to fix this now before, like I said, you get into that big schedule stretch and there's not a lot of time to practice. So this is a really big week for a lot of teams, or this past week, and then this week, or a couple of big weeks for a lot of teams, because at a certain point, and when you mentioned track, you're not tapering down yet. You're still kind of ramping up and getting ready for peak performances. So it should be interesting to see how this plays out. And, but like you did say, we did have some games over the April vacation. Quite an exciting finish for Barnstable on Saturday.
Yeah,
Barnstable baseball, that is. A 6-5 winner over Pittsfield. Again, you see with those April vacations, those odd matchups, Pittsfield out in Western Mass.
But, extreme Western.
Great way to end a week for Barnstable that didn't have a great start for them.
Yeah, they're starting to improve for sure. I mean, I've covered two of their games, and both of them ended on walk-off hits and seventh-inning rallies.
Good luck, John.
Yeah, I mean, which are, you know, certainly exciting in their confidence building. There are still questions and areas where Barnstable, I think, really needs to improve. I think, you know, talking to Coach Mark Bonavita afterward, he would definitely agree with me on that. But, you know, the things that they need to work on can be worked on. And if they have that don't quit attitude already in place, then as they get more comfortable with each other, as the younger kids get more comfortable with varsity play, they'll already have that as their foundation, and hopefully they'll be able to turn that into more wins.
I covered a couple of their walk-offs last year, too, one over Sandwich, one over Falmouth. So, I mean, it's still kind of refreshing to see, hey, new head coach in this year. This team still has the same drive and dedication to, you know, not think that they're too far out of games to rally. And as we saw there, they gave up the lead, I believe, the top of the seventh, and they still had the nerve to come back and score 2 runs to win it. So their rival Falmouth also lost to Dartmouth in the week 8-5, but they bounced back nicely with wins over Pittsfield on Friday and then New Bedford on Saturday.
Yeah.
Really good pitching from Matt Liebigman. I believe you covered that game. Did you cover that game Friday? Or no. We were reporting on that game Friday. good outing by Liebigman there. And Falmouth seems to be a team in a good spot, I believe. 5-2.
5-2. They actually have the most wins of anybody on the Cape. You know, that New Bedford game, Gates Kelleher, really great game. 4 hits, 3 RBIs. Kevin Peters, 3 RBIs. Anthony Carson, 4 hits. You know, Falmouth's baseball team, this is a team with a fair amount of returning players and presence, and they are seem to have found an early groove, and now they'll just be looking to keep that up. You know, their next game is Wednesday at home against Dartmouth, which is looking like a tough matchup. Dartmouth has beaten Barnstable already this season. They beat Bridgewater Raynham this season, so you know, Dartmouth has had a good couple of years in a lot of their sports, and so this will be a good challenge for Falmouth.
Yeah, a couple other interesting games as we got out today. I believe you're off to Upper Cape Mashpee still, right? So, yeah, talk a bit about that matchup.
So Upper Cape Mashpee is a matchup of two of the higher-rated teams in Division IV South. Mm-hmm. Upper Cape went to the South Finals last year. Mashpee went to the South Semis. A lot of people think they were the favorite to win the South, especially after St. John Paul got knocked out of the playoffs in the first round last year. So I think they were actually a little bit disappointed to not make it at least one round deeper and get to compete for a spot in the state tournament. You know, and both have had good starts to their season. Mashpee is 3-1. They have not lost a game since their season opening upset by Sturgis West. You know, Freddie Hanna is coming off a really good game, an 8-4 win against Sturgis East. But this was a week from, you know, it was April 13th. It was the Friday before April vacation started. But Hanna, 7 good relief innings, only one run, couple hits, couple walks, 3 Ks. Jared Barr had 3 hits in that game. So Mashpee is really finding their swing. Upper Cape is playing really well, too. They're 4-3. They won the Rotary Cup last Wednesday against Greater New Bedford Voke, which was the state champion in Division II last year. So they're showing that they can compete with some of the better teams in the state as well. Miles Duarte had a real good game in that one, including throwing out the tying run on a bad suicide squeeze. Riley Thornell had 4 innings pitched. He drove in 2 runs. Hunter Mahoney, you know, had a double, a couple of walks, a couple of runs scored. So I'm really looking forward to this. I think this will be a good telling of which of these teams is really continuing its momentum from last year and maybe which is rebuilding a little bit more.
Yeah, and we'll see. I'm sure the batch will come alive, like you mentioned, with the weather. I think, you know, teams are going to be a little more aggressive with their swings, not be as picky and just, you know, trying to get the ball into play. And
in general, it's easier to hit when it's warm.
Of course.
I mean, that's a pretty accepted just standard of baseball.
Absolutely. So I don't know if you had anything else on baseball.
But St. John Paul's still 3-0. Yeah. They're the other real top team. They host Atlantis Charter today at McKeon Park. I don't know that I think Atlantis Charter is necessarily going to be the best, the most competitive team they're going to face. But you also don't want to have a letdown after a week of, you know, of less play and less competition. So, you know, maybe this is the way to get them prepared for some of the tougher games they're going to face in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and SJP has games like this on its schedule every year just from playing in the Cape and Islands League. So I think they know how to focus in and know, hey, you know, let's not worry about the opponent. Let's just do the things we need to do.
Yeah,
Come out here with a victory and let's keep going, keep this thing rolling.
I agree.
So moving on to softball, interesting weekend for Monomoy softball. They were swept over the weekend by Bishop Fenwick. They lost 4-3 and 6-5. Molly Cherest in the two games combined. 24 strikeouts.
In 14 innings.
That's not a typo.
Yeah, that's almost 2 an inning, which, I mean, and Emma Thatcher was great in both. She was 2-for-3 at the plate in both games. Look, obviously they were Monomoy's first two losses, and that I'm sure that's disappointing. Bishop Fenwick is also a team, though, that is not in their division that they are not going to see in the playoffs. So you take the competition, you learn from it, but I think you also don't necessarily draw too many conclusions on Monomoy. Like, I still think they're one of the stronger teams in D3 South, and I think they're going to be a big threat in the playoffs, and that really hasn't changed just because they got swept by Fenwick.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's cool to see kind of a smaller school like Monomoy going up and challenging schools like that. We've seen schools like NASA do that from time to time with their girls' basketball program, and a couple other examples of that as well. But just to see a small school like Monomoy, you know, hey, you know, we think we're the best team on the Cape, so let's go prove that we're one of the, not just that, we're one of the better teams in the region, if not the state for a small school. So, hey, even though they didn't come out with a win in that one, it's still good to see them going for a challenge like that. And a doubleheader. You don't see a lot of softball doubleheaders in high school.
No.
I know in college there's doubleheaders.
It's very
pretty
common.
So just it's good, you know, preparedness for some of those players who definitely have college potential.
Cherist is going to go somewhere. Yeah. I would be shocked if she doesn't find a spot somewhere. Probably, I would assume, D1. But, I mean, if not, I'm certain she's good enough to play D2.
Right. You covered an interesting duel early in the week final with the Sandwich.
Yeah.
Sandwich coming out with an 11-9, bit of a rally win for them there.
Yeah, that game was a little crazy. It mostly came down to errors, you know, late in the game. But, you know, both teams rallied. They went back and forth. One team would go up. The other team would go back. There were like 2 or 3 home. I think there were 3 inside the park home runs in that game, actually. it was a crazy game, but the crowd was kind of into it, and it was fun. I mean, you know, I think there's – the defense, I think, would be on both teams' mind afterwards. But, you know, those are league matches, Atlantic Coast League matches, and they don't want to give those away. You know, Falmouth is Monomoy's opponent today, and they play Nantucket. They host Nantucket tomorrow. Nantucket is another one of these top teams. They are 4-0 on the so far. Their last game was April 11th when they beat Sturgis West 14-1. You know, Madeline Lamb, 5-inning no-hitter, 11, you know, she struck out 11 in 5 innings and no walks. Lombardi played well. She was 3-for-3, a walk, 3 runs, 3 RBIs. Like, this is another team that's really playing well right now. Again, I'm really curious to see what happens when Nantucket starts playing teams like Monomoy, which they haven't faced yet, because that's probably going to decide the Cape and Islands League.
Right. Another matchup I'm really interested in, you mentioned the ACL. Dennis Yarmouth is at Marshfield on Wednesday, and, you know, they were and probably still are the two best teams in the league. You know, Marshfield pitcher Brianna, I'm going to butcher her name here, the Marshfield starting pitcher, right? She threw a perfect game against Falmouth on the 13th. Just a really impressive showing for her. And, you know, if the Dolphins can somehow pull out that game in Marshfield, I think that'd make a really big statement. Because, again, this year they're going without the pitcher they've had for so many years, Sammy Feinstein.
Yep.
So I'm really interested to see if the bats come alive this week, because chances are they're going to need them to keep up with Marshfield.
Yeah, you know, they're at DY is at Plymouth South today. Their last game before this was also Friday the 13th. It was they beat Nauset 14-2 in another ACL league match. Maddie Medeiros pitched that one, 6 strikeouts, 6 hits, 2 walks, 1 earned run. Ava McGaffigan, who really, I think, came on the scene really strong in hockey. I mean, she played field hockey too, but
Both of the twins.
All the McGaffigans, I think, played field hockey. But Ava and Kayla, they came on really strong with DY, with the girls' hockey program.
Right.
They helped them go on their, I believe, their deepest playoff run in school history.
Right.
And now she's playing pretty well in softball. She went 4-for-4 against Nauset, a couple RBIs and 4 runs scored. So, you know, if they can get that good mix of pitching and hitting, they got a chance to compete with Marshfield. But I think Marshfield has had a couple of league wins already and are probably feeling like they can run the table on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. We talk about these eighth-grade twins, how much potential and how much future they have ahead of them, too. I mean, and we've mentioned on the show before, they've said it before that they're just good at every sport they seem to pick up. So who knows? Maybe even Paul Funk will be calling one day. Hey, need someone to step in. Oh, they're field hockey players. Also. No. But, you know, just cool to see that talent. I'm really interested to see where they go down the road. Another game Thursday, Sturgis East versus Sturgis West. Yeah. Always cool to see. These teams usually actually open up their season against each other. It was a little different this year. But, you know, these are two programs. Sturgis West has been a playoff team in years past. East has gotten in the playoffs as well. Both these teams have a lot of talent. And really, when they meet, these games could go either way. So we'll see what happens there. Boys lacrosse, you know, good showing by Nauset last week, a 13-8 winner over Bourne. I was at that game, which, by the way, hardly had any voice at that game. So kudos for the coaches for putting up with me during that ordeal. It's back now, fortunately or unfortunately, however you view that. Back to lacrosse.
Listeners, let us know.
Yeah. Back to boys lacrosse. So Nauset, good showing, 13-8 winner over Bourne and a 12-5 winner over SJP. You know, Trevor Good, really impressive to see him play. He was picking corners. I think he picked 3 corners against Bourne. And from far distance, too. I mean, 15, 20 yards from the net.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a hockey player, just finding the corners there. And just a really good show. He had 5 goals against Bourne. And this is a team that's rolling. And it should be interesting to see tomorrow, Tuesday, they play at Sandwich.
Yeah.
In a game where we just said before the show, this game could really go either way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both sides have some real impressive talent. Sandwich, we've talked about it. Tim Ladner.
Yeah.
A won over 80% of draws this year. And, you know, Nauset is going to have to find a guy who can cut into those, because if Sandwich is winning every draw, they have guys like Cam Lopes and Mather Negron who are just going to keep putting the ball in the net.
Mm-hmm.
But Nauset's pushback to that is they have some really good midfielders and defenders. Aiden Sullivan leading the charge there. Good can even come back and help with that. And just really all around, Nauset has a solid squad. So 4-1 Nauset versus 5-2 Sandwich. That game 4:30 p.m. Tuesday. So, and flip a coin, because I think that game could go either way.
Sure, it's been nice to see that Nauset program kind of come around. The last couple of years, I could see they had talent, but I don't know if they felt like just a little intimidated going against teams like Falmouth or Marshfield or what. But it always seemed like there were the top teams in the ACL, and over the last couple of seasons, Nauset was never really in a position to contend for a league title. I'm not sure if they're there yet. You probably have a better sense of that than I do, but they are definitely playing much more spirited lacrosse, and it seems like with a new coach has come a new kind of attitude and a new intensity to that team, which is great to see.
Yeah, they installed a new offense this year. They've really it's kind of similar to kind of a motion-style offense you see in basketball. You know, a lot of cutters in there as well, so it's really interesting to see it work. And then a guy like Good who can shoot from distance. I mean, there's not much you can do on defense. A guy who's going to shoot from distance is that accurate. So they get the ball in their best player's hands, and they execute. So, you know, teams obviously figure that out over time, but they have plenty of guys who can also step in. You know, midfielders like Cole Ventimiglia has been key as well there. So, I mean, not so this year. They've just found their rhythm on offense. You know, they don't give up easy shots on defense. And that's a big credit to, Coach Chris Gilhaus, who was an assistant for the past few years and then now stepping in as head coach. So this is a big week for Sandwich. So, you know, after that NASA game, they host Marshfield on Thursday. So really, they're going to need one of those two games to be victories if they want to stay in the chase for the ACL crown, because you only have so many of those games.
And you only have eight.
It's very hard to make up ground, you know, late in the year. And another game interesting, too, we get some Falmouth-Barnstable rivalry going on. 6 p.m. Friday night under the lights. You know, it's always fun to see these rivals get together. And a little extra rush being under the lights as well. But really interesting last year between these teams. You know, Falmouth beat Barnstable 17-1 in their first matchup. But then about 3 weeks later, they meet again. And Barnstable just fell short, lost 15-4. So just goes to show you, really anything
just
can happen.
Just fell short and lost 15-4?
15-14, sorry.
14, okay.
You catch on that one. Yeah. So really interesting to see how these two rivals are going to match up against each other. And Falmouth is rolling pretty well right now. Barnstable, they got a win during break, but lost to Martha's Vineyard as well. So we'll see how these two teams shape out under the lights at Barnstable.
That Vineyard game, I believe that was an overtime loss, which is – I'm sure, you know, especially disappointing or whatever. You know, Barnstable, they're always kind of up or down.
Right.
And so if you can be on an upswing when you're playing Falmouth, you have a chance against them. That's probably what the case was last year with that 15-14 game. And then, but if you're down, if you're just having an off game, Falmouth can do some damage. I mean, Colin Almeida is really good, and they can put a hurt on you.
And part of it with Barnstable, too, is they've been missing Seb Tilton a little bit, too. He's their main faceoff guy. One of their, if not their best scorer. So hopefully he's working himself back into the rotation. Mm-hmm. And also Barnstable's been juggling goalies too as well. Michael Bridges and Jack Needham have both gotten starts. So I think Coach Chris Widd is still trying to figure out who's going to get on a roll here and kind of just, you know, ride the hot hand the rest of the way. And I don't think he's really found out who that's going to be yet. So a good performance against Falmouth would probably do it. So we'll see who gets the start Friday.
For sure.
Going on to girls lacrosse, back to Nauset. The Nauset girls, they got themselves to 3-3, a 9-7 win over Bourne, and also a 10-7 win over SJP. Melissa Edney and Maddie Daly, four goals apiece against SJP. But Isabel Travers, really impressive in goals. She had 12 saves against Bourne, but then 17 against SJP.
Wow.
So really impressive showing by her. And excuse me, Nauset, a team that, you know, they've been right around that middle of the pack. You know, they get themselves to 500, and hopefully they can ride that momentum going into the future. We'll see what happens there.
Daly's having a pretty good spring, isn't
Absolutely.
she?
Absolutely, yeah. She's, you know, pretty much the reliable, you know, goal scorer. You need that in lacrosse. But you have other people, like I just mentioned, Edney, who can step in and score too. So this good showing by Nauset, who really has had to rely on new players to step up and be leaders for them. Falmouth Academy, an impressive romp over Mashpee, 21-9. You know, we talked about it last week. You know, both of those teams had really good goal scorers, but Falmouth Academy just showing their dominance in that one.
12 goals for Jane Early.
12 goals for Jane Early, yeah. it almost isn't even fair with Early. You know, a senior who we say she's not going to Boston College, but does have that D1 potential. Mm-hmm. Going against Mashpee's defenders, who a lot of them are 8th and 9th graders.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a learning experience for Mashpee, but at the same time, maybe they take that experience and say, hey, we're not going to face anyone like that, at least on the Cape, the rest of the way. So
sure, but if Mashpee gets to the playoffs, they very well could play Falmouth Academy again.
Right, but what I mean is that the rest of the regular season, I mean, it's one of those things where you just take what you can out of that game. It's still 9 goals. I mean, they still had some of their offense going with Palermo and Hendricks, but obviously they can only do so much going against Hurley and Ramsey there.
The thing with girls lacrosse is because there is so many rules about contact and how little you're allowed to even touch the stick of the opposing player,
right?
If your offense isn't really in gear, if you really don't have dynamic scorers who can do a lot of work on their own, or maybe, you know, do a lot of work and then dish it to somebody else to pass, you're really going to struggle. You know, in boys lacrosse, you can check, you can push, you can keep the score down. It's very hard to have low scoring games in girls lacrosse because it's so easy to, it's not easy, but there are strategies that will get you a free position shot, right, a direct shot at the goal.
You can only be so aggressive.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you don't want to be giving talented scorers free position shots.
Exactly.
Because they're going to score more times than not.
Pretty much, yeah.
So another interesting match. So we got Barnstable. We have our first installment of Falmouth versus Barnstable. Actually, later today, Barnstable girls are at Falmouth. Falmouth still undefeated.
Yep.
Really interested to see where this team could go, because it really does seem like the sky's the limit for them so far.
Quinn O'Rourke, I think, I'm not going to say this is a breakout year, because she's been very strong in multiple sports for Falmouth.
Right.
But she seems to be having a really, really good spring. Better maybe even than last spring when they tied for the ACL title for the first time. I mean, last year was Falmouth's best season as a program.
Right. And you talked to her back in the fall. I think you actually did a small little video interview with her. She really seems to, no game, no situation is too big for her. It just seems to really have her head on her shoulders there. And that's the kind of leadership you need out of some of your best players. So
Falmouth, I think, in both lacrosse and field hockey, is a team that really stresses spatial awareness. I remember talking to Courtney Lima, I think, the Falmouth field hockey coach in the fall, and she talked about how much passing was critical and how much they don't want to be carrying the ball too much on any one player's stick. And I imagine a lot of that same spacing just translates naturally to girls lacrosse.
Right, and three games this week for them, so they have Barnstable today, and then they're hosting DY on Thursday, and then they're going at Bridgewater Raynham Saturday morning, so that should be an interesting matchup at BR, and Old Colony League team, bit of a bigger school, so we'll see how they match up then. A little bit of track I just wanted to mention. You know, there wasn't a whole lot, actually, if any, over the break. Track Tuesday, if you will, this coming week, though. Barnstable girls are at Bridgewater Raynham. The boys host Bridgewater Raynham. Always good athletes on both sides. Sandwich at DY, interesting to see those ACL matchups. A lot of talent in there as well. And then Nauset at Falmouth, also on Tuesday. And like I mentioned before, you know, a lot of these track athletes are coming off of break, where if you're not an upperclassman and, you know, looking at schools or going on vacation, you're in there, you know, working out and really getting after it during that, you know, time, because there's no meet there. So,
or you're doing running on your own.
Exactly.
You know, I would imagine all of these distance, you know, these mile teams and 2 mile runners, that's what they're doing a lot of in the spring, in the spring break.
So I don't know if you have any other high school stuff you had prepared on. There's a couple of stuff I wanted to go kind of off script a little bit on, on high school. Yeah, so we had a Patriots event over over the vacation week, which was interesting. So the Patriots held a free football and cheer clinic at the Joint Base Cape Cod. There's always a whole bunch of names of the bases. My first experience going there, and quick story, I actually went to the wrong gate. I'm greeted by a soldier, very nice guy with an assault rifle. So that was a little intimidating knowing I was at the wrong gate, but he did point me in the right direction, and I found my way. But the cool thing about this clinic, though, is that four current Patriots were there. David Andrews, Joe Thune, we both were on the starting offensive line, were there. Marquise Flowers, he played in the Super Bowl as a linebacker. And then Ted Karras, you know, one of those guys filling in on the line. And, you know, it was funny, you know, the guy who runs this, Pete Brock, he's the president of the Patriots Alumni Association, saying when they look for players to volunteer and do this, it's always the offensive linemen who step up first. It's kind of one of those, you know, they're just, they're big guys, but they're really friendly, and, you know, they're willing to talk to us as well, but we're really nice with the kids. One kid from Sandwich even knocked down Joe Thune during a blocking drill, so it was really, really cool to see they were having a good time with it. But obviously I was obliged to ask some questions, too, about, you know, the Patriots' future. Right now the big thing is, are Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski coming back? And coy as usual, as I'm sure they're taught to be, you know, they're just focused on themselves. They were back this past week for beginning of OTAs and basically just workouts and meetings and stuff like that. But still good to see them get back their time and to spend it on the Cape. This is the first of 22 free clinics that they do. And the reason they started on the base is that it's the month of – I'm going to butcher this real quickly. It's the month of the military – child, I think, or something like that. So honoring children and families who sacrifice so much as well with their loved ones serving. So, yeah, so it's just a way to give back. You know, the Patriots do a lot with salute to service and stuff like that. So it was cool to see this is where this thing was being kicked off. And, you know, these are free clinics that happen all over New England. And if nothing else, the kids walk away with a free T-shirt.
Yeah, and they get to meet some Patriots.
Absolutely.
If I was a little kid, I'd enjoy that.
Right. And it's so funny, too, to see that dichotomy, because there's former Patriots there, too. So guys like Steve Grogan, Steve Nelson. You know, you hear big applause from the parents when they hear them
introduced. The kids have no idea who they are.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of these kids are so young that they still don't even know fully who these Patriots are. Now, if Tom Brady showed up, chances are you'd know who these kids would have a clue who they are. But, you know, you say Patriots, these are professional athletes, and they're first class all the way. So We were inside the hangar, luckily. I was worried this thing was going to be outside at first.
Oh, yeah.
So at least we're inside, and it's interesting driving through that base. You really do feel like you kind of unlocked a secret level of Cape Cod, because mm-hmm. not everybody gets to see what that base is like, and it does take up a huge chunk of Cape Cod. Be nice if it was open while this traffic's been going on here, but can't win them all, right?
Right.
couple quick points, too. You know, back to the Cape League, and we're going to do a little Cape League corner here. Oakland A's pitcher Sean Manea pitched a no-hitter against the Red Sox mm-hmm. on Saturday
former
night.
Former Hyannis player. Fiamma, a star for them.
Yeah, and he pitched for the Hyannis Harbor Hawks in 2012. He was actually the league's top prospect. Mm-hmm. And you look now, that's not an easy award for a pitcher to win. I mean, usually you see that go to either someone's got the best average or most mm-hmm. RBI or something like that. But
and I think that's one that's voted on by scouts that attend the games.
Right.
So you really have no idea what exactly they're looking for, who they're there to scout for, what kind of positions they're looking
right.
for. So, you know, you can take a pretty good guess at who the MVP will be or who the pitcher of the year will be
right.
a lot, but you never know exactly what the scouts are evaluating on. And it's sort of just by their consensus, and that's all very hush-hush okay. until it's revealed.
And to no-hit the Red Sox, who have been hotter than any other team in the majors right now, mm-hmm. and that was really impressive to see. And our thoughts are also with Danny Farquhar. You know, on Friday night, he suffered a brain aneurysm while he was in the dugout of that game. You know, he was in critical stable condition as of yesterday, Sunday, underwent surgery to reduce the swelling in his brain. So very serious injury.
Yeah.
He pitched for the Harwich Mariners in 2007. So again, seeing that Cape League connection there,
mm-hmm.
we hope he's okay. And obviously we're not worried about when he's getting back to the mound. We just hope he can walk out of the hospital in one piece. So.
Mm-hmm.
Scary thing to see here, but kind of puts life in perspective a little bit that these guys, you know, anything can happen. And, you know, brain aneurysms, once you have a certain test for it,
yeah.
it can happen to anybody. So a real scary moment there, and we hope he's okay. And the other thing this weekend, the Seagulls Four-Ball Championship kicked off, and Scott Nickerson, a former Barnesville baseball coach, said it best when the weather for this time of year,
mm-hmm.
sunny and clear skies, it was an A+.
Yeah.
And
especially after the week like leading up to it.
Not a lot of people have been playing golf, at least around here beforehand,
mm-hmm.
but it really is a reunion because, I mean, this tournament is the kickoff to competitive Cape golf
mm-hmm.
to start the year. And at Hyannis Sport Club, that's where the season kind of ends too with
yep.
the Cape Cod Amateur. So this is really a kickoff. A lot of old friends get to say hi to one another and really just have a great time. You know, nobody really, I noticed getting mad, and there were some moments where people probably wish they had a shot back.
Mm-hmm.
But I
think that's golf. I mean,
yeah, but these guys are competitors, and they want to win, but they also enjoy who they're playing with,
mm-hmm.
and they just have a good time with it.
And as you say, I think some of them are happy to be out. I mean, I
yeah.
know that golf courses on the Cape, they try to stay open in the winter and the
mm-hmm.
and the early spring when they can. But if the weather has been like what it's been like on the Cape for most of March and April – up until like the last 4 days, nobody's
right.
going to want to come out to golf. So
mm-hmm.
I think everybody was also just a little stir crazy
yeah.
to get out on the courses finally.
And people were still in long sleeves, but it was a comfortable long sleeve,
yeah.
you know? And people sometimes wearing long sleeve under their polo. So kind of like, I guess that's classy casual, right?
Sure.
Or whatever,
why
you want
not?
To go with that. Tournament continues with quarterfinal play on this coming Saturday, and then it ends Sunday with the semifinals and the finals. All of that is at Hyannis Sport Club. Very scenic place. You look right onto Nantucket Sound there,
mm-hmm.
not far from Craigville Beach. But what was interesting, though, the defending champs missed the championship flight, so we're going to have a new champion this year. We'll see what happens there. But I'll tell you, though, every time I'm on the golf course covering these, I almost want to go out there and play a few holes myself. Can't really do that, but, you know, it is cool to be out there and just experience and enjoy the nice weather. But big shout-out to Tournament Director Dave Wilson, though, and Andy Lane, you know, just being accommodating for me over the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for everything, guys, and we'll see you next weekend. So I think that just
yeah,
about wraps it up for episode 7. We'll be back next week for Crazy 8, I guess.
Sure.
Hopefully we have a crazy episode.
We'll come up with puns related to the number for each episode
go.
Coming up.
Gotta keep it fresh.
Be sure to check us out on CapeCodTimes.com/sports or check out the print edition of the Cape Cod Times for both Steve and my and everybody's continuing coverage of Seagulls, of high school sports, of the Cape League come the summertime, which is much closer than anybody thinks. I mean, we're really only about 6 weeks away from the start of the Cape League season, so be sure to check that out. I'm Matt Goisman. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Goisman CCT. That's MattGoisman CCT.
And I'm Steve Derderian. You can also find me on Twitter at Steve_Derderian. That's Derderian. And if you have any recommendations for the show or anything you want us to discuss, feel free to leave a comment in the Facebook Live. You can also email us at sports@keepcaughtonline.com. Matt, we'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
Bye.